Welcome to the Not Old Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelzang. As part of our Smithsonian Associates Art of Living series, our guest today on the Not Old Better Show is Carol Ann Lloyd-Stanger. Carol Ann Lloyd-Stanger is one of those incredibly interesting people that we get to hear from on the Not Old Better Show. Carol Ann Lloyd-Stanger is a well-known speaker and lecturer and will be telling us about the making of a monarch, the power, the intrigue, and the roles of mothers in shaping this history of the monarchy.
Throughout history, centers of power have usually been recognized on the battlefield and in the center of the monarchy. Typically the king throughout English history, every once in a while a queen. But it turns out in many cases that the mothers of the monarchs, whether their role was official or not, did extraordinary work in establishing and forwarding the work of some of the monarchs, and their stories deserve to be told.
That, of course, is our guest today, Carol Ann Lloyd-Stanger, who will be at the Smithsonian Associates program presenting a day-long series about the making of a monarch, English kings, queens, and their mums, Saturday, February 3rd, 2018, 9:30 a.m. at the Ripley Center in Washington, D.C. Well, Carol Ann Lloyd-Stanger, thanks so much for joining us today.
I'm so happy to be here, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Good. Well, Carol Ann, you are a highly regarded speaker, a lecturer, and a facilitator. So tell us briefly what your full-day presentation, The Making of a Monarch, English Kings, Queens, and Their Mums, at the Smithsonian, coming up here very soon, will involve.
Well, this is a new kind of program for me and actually for the Smithsonian Associates. Typically, we focus on a character or two from history or from the arts. And instead, for this program, we're looking at a theme, the theme of what happens when the child becomes the monarch and the mother is still around. So we have a king and queen on the throne. The king dies. The child becomes usually the king, every once in a while a queen. But mom is still around. So what role does mom play? This has been an important question from the time of Eleanor of Aquitaine in the early 1100s, right up through the current queen, whose mother passed away just a few years ago. So we're looking at a wide sweep of history with this common theme of what role does this mother play in her child's reign.
I think it's just a fascinating subject. I know it will really be of interest to our listeners. And if they're paying attention to the crown, if they're paying attention to
right.
Victoria, these are all very relevant topics to your presentation. But I'd like to start with a more broad question here and ask you, what do Richard the Lionheart, Henry the Seventh, Queen Victoria, and Her Majesty the Queen have in common?
Well, those monarchs happen to have been quite significantly influenced by mothers who lived for a long period during their reigns.
Okay.
So in the case of Richard the Lionheart, Eleanor of Aquitaine managed to outlive two husbands and became a driving force in Richard's reign. We think of Richard the Lionheart as this great English king. He is often included in the most successful, the most famous, the most beloved English kings. But in fact, he spent very little time in England. He may not have spoken English. And it is his mother who cultivated very carefully and with a lot of effort that image and that legend. So the mothers can have an extraordinary role. Same thing with Henry the Seventh. He, of course, took the throne from Richard the Third, and Henry the Seventh established the great Tudor dynasty. But it is actually his mother, Margaret Beaufort, who is the driving force making that happen. It is she who has all of the contacts, all of the connections, and paves the way for her son Henry to return from his exile in France to defeat Richard III. So in those cases, the mothers play an extraordinary role. Interestingly, in the reign of Queen Victoria, her mother brought her up in a very strict fashion. The upbringing is nicknamed the Kensington system because they lived at Kensington Palace. Mm-hmm. But Victoria was not encouraged as a young princess to learn to make her own decisions or do anything on her own. And when she becomes queen, she suddenly has this sense of freedom and in a way rebels against that upbringing to do all kinds of things and make all kinds of decisions on her own. So it's an interesting relationship. And I think when we come to Her Majesty the Queen, we see someone who so appreciated her mother's wisdom, her mother's experience, and Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, lived to be 102. I mean, she just lived this wonderfully long life and was a very solid presence from the time that Queen Elizabeth II was first queen as a fairly young woman of 25, right up through her mother's death recently. So we see an extraordinary influence of these mothers on their children. Interestingly, a couple of women here on these queens as well as kings, and the real power of a mother to influence that monarchy.
Absolutely. Here's to moms. I'm very I'm very close to my mom, and she's had a big influence on me. Some of these kings and queens and their moms have definitely had this had the same as you suggest. And even though these moms, these mothers, didn't hold official public positions, they changed history. So tell us a couple of stories about those who did and what they did.
Well, some of the interesting stories happen when the king takes the throne in a less traditional way. So, for example, during the Wars of the Roses, and this is a period of time where there are a number of battles about really who should be king, the progress of the Yorks is very much supported and, one might say, driven by Cecily Neville, who is the Duchess of York. And although she was never Queen of England, in fact, her son defeats Henry VI and is crowned Edward IV, so he becomes the king, having not had a father who was king. But Cecily believed that she should have been queen. And so when her son marries somebody she doesn't like, and she certainly doesn't want to lose her sort of status to another queen, she styles herself queen by right. Hmm. And that is the way she thinks of herself and sort of infuses herself into the reign of her son. So we see someone taking an opportunity and really making it happen. And Cecily really did do a lot to advance the Yorkist cause. So that's one example of somebody who was not official, but really did change history.
Well, you mentioned the War of the Roses. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that, and maybe from the inside out, from looking from the inside out, this was really family feud at its best.
Absolutely. And what people, you know, the War of the Roses is such a poetic title. But at the time, it was known as the Cousins War. Because what happened was Edward III had many sons, and then his oldest son, who should have followed him to the throne, died. So if we go through the lines of primogeniture, the crown should then go to the grandson, who's a child, who didn't really do a good job. And so it opened all these questions of who really deserves to be king. The two key players end up being Henry VI and Edward IV. And in both cases, their wives or their mothers really are key in the battle moving forward their claims to the throne. So Henry VI's wife, Marguerite of Anjou, battles, not literally in battle, but pushes her husband forward because she wants her son to be the next king of England. She wants to be a queen mother. We have Cecily forwarding the cause of her son, who does become Edward IV. We have Margaret Beaufort, who is extraordinary and manages to be in favor among both the Lancastrian side and the Yorkist side in unbelievable ways, and is also, while she's in favor, working behind the scenes to help her son, Henry VII, eventually get to the throne, and in a very dramatic way, marry Elizabeth of York and end the Wars of the Roses. So although we may be more familiar with the men and the battles, if you look at the inside of that situation, it's mm-hmm. very much the women who are forwarding their cause and making things happen. It's really very exciting.
It is very exciting. It's fascinating too, this intrigue and this family drama, as you say. Mm-hmm. There's been scandalous behavior among the royals throughout history. And I know in my research of you suggest that the real test is whether a monarch can manage it. So let's jump ahead to today and tell us, how has Queen Elizabeth's popularity changed? She's dealt with this several scandals. She's dealt with the death of Diana when the queen was unpopular. So
right.
How has she managed to navigate all this and still be popular today?
I think her mother very likely did play a role in that. One of the first scandals that Queen Elizabeth experienced was as a young princess who did not plan or have any thought of becoming queen, because it was her uncle, Edward VIII, who became the king, not her father. But Edward VIII abdicated the throne for the woman he loved, as he put it, so he could marry Wallis Simpson. And that act of stepping aside from his duty and in what they believed, the family believed, was a betrayal of the royal family, shirking his role as king, pursuing his own interests and his own desires rather than the good of the monarchy, sent shockwaves through the royal family. And at that time, Queen Elizabeth's parents became king and queen. And they stepped into those roles and led the country through World War II. Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, is famous for staying in London during the Blitz. Buckingham Palace was bombed. She was there when it was bombed. She was not near the bombing, but she was in the palace when it was bombed. She would go out and visit the West End and see the people whose homes had been destroyed by the bombing and speak with them. So she became a very important presence for the British people at a time when it was really their resolve that was under attack as much as the country was under attack. And her steadiness and her presence meant so much that Hitler called Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, who was the queen at the time, the most dangerous woman in Europe from his perspective. So Princess Elizabeth saw her mother in the heart of things, never looking away from duty, always doing what was expected, stepping up all the time. And I think that example is what has seen the queen through the times that were difficult for her. So scandal is really nothing new to the royal family, but the steadiness of the queen mother set an example, I think, for Her Majesty the Queen to be steady, be consistent, be that voice that doesn't change in terms of devotion to the country. In fact, she pledged her life, she said, whether it be long or short, to the service of the country. So that has remained the same. In some ways, there are traditions that have changed. And certainly we now have the Prince of Wales, who is married to a woman who's divorced. Well, that was the whole problem with King Edward. So there are some traditions that have changed, but the steadiness of the Queen's devotion has not. And when she agreed, when the Olympics were in London, to do that scene where she was with James Bond, those kinds of moments, which are unusual for a queen, but show that she really, I think, does have her finger on the pulse of the nation. Those are wildly popular things she does, and I think really increase that popularity.
Fascinating.
So I think for her, it's a combination of the steadiness, the resolve to duty, and the ability to change, to be a little more approachable, to take part in things that are fun and a little more friendly with the people. And that combination has worked really well for her.
Well, what a fascinating subject. Carol Ann Lloyd-Stanger, thanks so much for joining us today. Whether it's the modernization of the monarchy, whether it's the intrigue, the drama, maybe being the most dangerous woman in Europe, this will be a great day. And we're so appreciative of you spending some time here with us to give us kind of a taste of what's to come. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
My thanks to our guest today, Carol Ann Lloydstanger, who will be at the Smithsonian Associates Program presenting a day-long series about the making of a monarch, English kings, queens, and their mums, Saturday, February 3rd, 2018. More information is available at our website. My thanks as well to the Smithsonian team for all they do to support our interviews. As usual, we'll post links to everything. And also, as usual, my thanks to you, the listeners, for joining me today. Your time is valuable, and I'm grateful you're spending some of it with me. I'm always interested in feedback, and you can leave that at iTunes, Google Play, or send me email at info@notold-better.com. Stay tuned for our next show, another great one, as we talk about better. The Not Old Better Show. Thanks, everybody.